let's go back to the Greeks and the Romans.
Yeah.
There was a time when you didn't have to do any actual digging to come across dinosaur bones.
Absolutely. For instance, as I found in Greece, first of all, Greece and the whole Mediterranean area is an earthquake zone. I mean, there are just constant seismic events, and that jumbles up the bones so that they're unrecognizable fossil bones of extinct creatures. But on the other hand, it reveals them all the time, and they also just erode out of riverbanks. They would erode out of landslides, or even during a thunderstorm. These things would just be emerging constantly. You'd find them when you were plowing your fields, and in Central Asia, where they find dinosaurs in the dinosaur fossils in the Gobi Desert, they're constantly being revealed. I've heard paleontologists say that Protoceratops dinosaurs are so ubiquitous they're a nuisance, because they're looking for other species, and these things just constantly erode out.
Yeah,
so they're obvious to any passerby in antiquity.
Right, and this is true too for would have been true for the earliest Americans for they could be out on a horse just riding through the desert, as one of your illustrations indicate.
Yeah,
and there just might be the entire skeleton of some ancient bird.
That's
or
right.
Reptile.
Just laid out there on the ground in the chalk, and the pterosaurs and, the flying reptiles, their fossils are often articulated right there in the chalk, so that it's a dark bones in white chalk.
Right.
I mean, you would just be really struck by the image of it. And of course, they rode out, so you see them, and then they disappear if you don't collect them and take care of them. So they're just constantly appearing and then disappearing.
Right, and so they would actually collect them. I mean, we have what would be part of a story? Like, what would be a typical story? What would be the, because it seems like there's sort of two ways of approaching this. They would collect the bones. We have record of them using them for medicine and for other things. But then they would also build a story around them at the same time.
Well, if you want to talk about the Greeks and Romans, or
Wherever you want to go with that, because it's kind of a big topic.
Well, what's interesting is that these were just very much part of their cultural landscape and their natural landscape. So, they would come across these emerging fossils whenever they're plowing fields, whenever there's a severe thunderstorm, whenever there's an earthquake or landslide, something like that. And they would actually collect them, measure them. Measurements are quite rare in antiquity, and yet we have many measurements of, the length of the thigh bones, the skull capacity of these fossils. They would take them to the temple. The temple would be the museum, and they would display them there in the temple for everyone to come and see. And marvel at, and they would be identified as the remains of either monsters from myth, giants from myth, or even ancient heroes from ancient myth. So they really took care of them as they were almost custodians.
Right.
So they were paleontologists. They were doing exactly what paleontologists did. And they tried to, like scientists today, imagine what they looked like, what their behavior was, what killed them.
They would try to put flesh on the bones.
Absolutely.
They would try to, so literally and physically. So, like the story, say, of the griffin.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, tie those two things together, if you would.
Yeah. Well, the griffin, the fabulous gold-guarding griffin, first appeared in Greek literature in about the 7th century BC, so 600 BC, something like that. When they began to trade with the Scythians, the nomads who lived in Central Asia, ranging from Black Sea all the way to the Gobi Desert. The Greeks had never seen griffins, but the Scythians told them about these creatures. They said that the griffins were but large creatures with four legs, a beak, and that they made their nests on the ground, that they gathered gold and put gold in their nests. They had wings, but they never flew. They were earthbound. They preyed on deer, horses, and humans. They were fierce, four-legged predators, but they had a beak like an eagle. No one ever knew whether they had fur or feathers or scales. There were controversy over that. But the Greeks.
But stop right there. Even how interesting that is. That in a way, I mean, later on, you know, sort of in the Jurassic Park film era, where that later we're talking about the fact that these early dinosaurs very likely had feathers.
Yeah.
But I mean that. I mean, so
and that the Greeks even imagined that maybe these creatures had feathers. They speculated exactly like scientists today.
Right, but they were right.
And they were right.
And they were right.
They were also right to say that they were like birds.
Right.
They noticed
so they were making this connection between reptiles and birds thousands of years before. And if you had said this, I mean, this is the part that always kind of gets me.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the cryptozoology piece. If in the 1980s you had said, you know what, I think that these dinosaurs were originally covered in feathers, you would have gotten laughed out of your college job. You would have.
That's absolutely true. You wouldn't be hired at most of the museums and paleontologists had to go through a lot of grief to get these theories out there until they finally found the evidence of it. Now you can find evidence of feathered dinosaurs in China. But what's interesting to me is that the ancient Greeks and these Scythian nomads created artworks that depict griffins. Some of them have fur, some of them have feathers, and some of them have scales.
How about that?
Yeah, so they, you know, they also show them taking care of their young.
Right.
They're the only, there are no depictions of baby monsters in antiquity except for the griffin.